The Gamer's Haven at gamershavenpodcast.com and Vorpal Network at vorpalnetwork.com are proud to present coverage of Gen Con 2010.
It's game time.
Quiet, please. I am analyzing.
That's it, man. Game over, man. It's game over.
Is the next step the transplantation of the human brain?
Ballsy. Stupid, but ballsy.
Stand by for action.
Welcome to the party, pal.
Okay.
Remember, we're not dealing with an intelligence on our own level.
Bring in the logic probe!
Ooh!
End of line.
Noble Knight Games has been serving the needs of thousands of gamers worldwide since 1997. Huge selection of over 30,000 unique products, including discounts on most in-print games of up to 50% off or more. Noble Knight Games is the place for out-of-print RPGs, board games, war games, collectible card games, miniatures, and all things game-related. They ship worldwide and will purchase or trade your titles you no longer need, new, or used. Your satisfaction is guaranteed. Just visit www.noblenight.com. Or visit our website for direct access to thousands of new, out-of-print, and in some cases, one-of-a-kind items.
This is the Vorpal Network.
The fifth annual in-flight report from yours truly. Who else has been here before? Alright, the first year was a legendary. The first year, I just have to tell the story of the first year. So we decided to do this as a way to interface with our fans, to talk about what we do, to give you guys a chance to, you know, ask us direct questions about why is this, why is that, and, you know, why is your line so long, you know, why doesn't this come out, why is this in stock, et cetera, et cetera. And we're just here to answer the questions as candidly as possible. And it's a great tradition. We really appreciate it. The first year, we announced it, and we got put in what was the hotel? It was a Hyatt of some kind. Anyway, there's a hotel about six blocks away from here with no sign that this is a hotel. And I am absolutely amazed and gratified that I think eight people made it, because they truly, I couldn't find it. I mean, these guys are amazing. And you know, I think I see some people here that were there then. Thank you. My name is Chris Peterson. I'm the CEO, founder of Fantasy Flight Games. Last year, I had a big dog and pony show with slides and everything. This year, we decided to change the format a little bit, maybe not going to go back, but to be a little more informal Q&A and a little less of a Steve Jobsian sales job for you guys. First thing I should note is we've had some people come up and ask us, like, what's your big announcement today? What's the big announcement? There's no announcement. Sorry. Okay, everybody goes on. No, there is no announcement. We have no big earth-shattering announcement. We pretty much blew
what's
our
left off, after
the
past week. 5 days?
You've seen our website. We had lots of really, really cool things that we're able to reveal to the public. Somebody asked me, why do you reveal it on the website when you can have all the, you know, all the excitement at Gen Con? Frank answer is, we'd like to reveal it first, and we don't have the type of planning that allows us to put a big black curtain up around our booth when we set everything up, and so we just can't keep the secret once we put in that hall, and so we really want to be able to reveal it to everybody, and of course you guys who are here get a chance to see the stuff. Just some facts about FFG in case you don't know about our company. We're 15 years old. We are based in Roseville, Minnesota, which is basically close suburb of Minneapolis. We have about 72 staff members, and we publish games in a fairly wide variety of genres. About half of our business is international, and we're a very global company. We have a substantial amount of staff that are that does our production and sourcing engineering to try to maximize the value that we have in our games for you guys. I founded the company about 15 years ago, and since then I've been really blessed to be at this is my Gen Con number 14. And you having fun? Good. And since over that time, I've had a chance to have really wonderful people talk to me, and some of the most wonderful people that I know come work for me, and so I can introduce those guys. In order of no significance, this order has no significance, I should say. Steve Horvath is our VP of Marketing and Communications. Steve, like me, is a true-blooded gamer and game industry guy. Steve has. Do you want to talk about your little background, Steve?
No.
Okay. Well, Steve has been a player. He's been a game store owner. He's worked for Wizards of the Coast as a brand manager. He was the CEO of Sabretooth Games, both while they were, and he worked for Sabretooth Games before their acquisition of the Games Workshop. In our really close, excellent relationship with Games Workshop that we consummated about 3 years ago, Steve came on board with FFG, and he's been a really excellent, excellent voice for the company, and also in really getting our marketing channels set up and appropriate to the level of complexity that we have. One of the things to realize that one of the goals we have for everything we do is to try to treat every game as if it was the only game we made. That sometimes is a challenge, but we really try hard, and there's certainly, I hope there's some guys out there who are gonna ask me questions about this game. We wanna answer them right now if we can.
It's my fault if we don't answer them right now.
I'll try to answer them. Anyway, so that's Steve's job, and the second gentleman is Corey Konishka. Corey is not only a game designer of quite some amazing talent, in my opinion. I was originally the game designer, the graphic designer, the warehouse guy, all this stuff. And over the years, as we grew and get more people, it's quite important for me to make sure that the games and the vision and the sort of the core building blocks of those games were appropriate for what we are. And as we grew to 48, 50, 60 people, that became almost an unbearable burden for me to do. But fortunately, I was able to find in Corey somebody who really shared that same vision and even more excellent than I could ever express it. And so Corey takes on the role as the lead designer at FFG, which means that gameplay, quality control, general vision statements for whatever we're trying to accomplish from A to Z goes through Corey, who works with me on a more fundamental level to make sure that our games are as exciting as we think they can be. And there's Anton Torres, who's a newer member of the team. Anton has been featured on many videos and is our here at the show, representing, he works for Steve, I should say. He's essentially Fantasy Flight's general questions and concerns and information, PR contact at the show. So if there's any press here you want to talk to FFG, have any questions, Anton is the...
Yeah. Find me by the info.
Okay. So, to give you an idea of the year that went by, we've had a really, really phenomenal year this year. We think we put out some really fantastic releases. And of course, a lot of people talk to me about, oh, this release, this and that here, and so on. Like a game like Dungeon Quest or whatever that they're putting out here today. One of the things that when I talk, I hope you realize that I actually, right now, I'm living in 2012. So sometimes FFG's behavior, if you think it's a little odd, is because, some of the games that we're just coming out with today was actually incubated, purchased, licensed, created, thought about a year and a half ago. So it's always something I think is important, or 2 years ago. It's always something to sort of keep in mind is that we are so excited when these games come out, and we get many wonderful suggestions. But if you really want to make a suggestion that's helpful to me, it has to be something about 2012, roughly.
You'd be happy to know the weather's good in 2012.
Yeah.
So the don't win the championship.
It just gives you an idea of how far we plan. So sometimes it doesn't look sensible. Like, why did you do this way? Why does this come out now? What's it taking so long? And what's up with this is that we have needed to take a fairly long view of how we produce our games and what strategy we have for our games. And sometimes it doesn't make sense for us to come out and say that right away, primarily because we've been bitten so many times by ourselves promising something we couldn't deliver. So we have a very strict policy now that we try not to talk about anything unless we're very certain that we can deliver it when we say we will and in the capacity that we say that it will be delivered.
Again, that's my fault.
What's your fault?
That we don't talk about this stuff until it's
yes,
right.
yes. He was a master of secrets. But we've had a really phenomenal year, and we've, as you all know, we made a bunch of announcements here for our fall releases that we're really excited about. And we just, Dungeon Quest is going to be available around the world at the end of this month. I guess there's no sales guys here, so take what I say with a grain of salt, but very, very soon. We released the Death Watch role-playing game, which is the third game in the Warhammer 40K RPG hemisphere. And we've been so excited about that line. I think it's done extraordinarily well, and we're really proud of it. And I'm happy to hear when Games Workshop talks to me about how happy they are about it. You know, it makes our day. Because it's a wonderful universe, and we'd love to touch it. We'd love to touch it and be able to sort of feel it closer than most get to do.
And we debuted the Collector's Edition today, right?
Yes, and it was interesting seeing the Collector's Edition of Death Watch. When I say debuted, what that means is that we're showing it off. It's actually not for sale yet. And in no small part, thanks to the complexity and extreme coolness of this thing, you guys should go see it. The entire Death Watch production, which we have some books, came here early. We expect Death Watch to be available to you probably in about 8 weeks to 9 weeks of time. So if anybody's curious about when the rest of the world will get them, that's where they are. And they're also sold out at the show. Another thing we announced, of course, is a Sid Meier's Civilization game. And small story is that about 7 years ago, I was in talks with them. I think it was Michael Prose. It was whoever owned Civilization before Take-Two did. It's changed hands a number of times. We almost had the license of Civilization when another company whose CEO was buddies with people in the software industry came in and wiped us out right before we got it. So there are people who come and say, oh, they're doing just like the Eagle game, Civilization game that was published 6 years ago. And I always go, you know, that was one of those things in business. Sometimes you work for 6 months or something, and it just, poof, it just disappears. You live, and you move on, and you try again. And so we're just extremely excited that we could put our vision, more specifically Kevin Wilson's vision, into the Civilization game. It's not available at the show. It's going to be available sometime later. But we're playing here. We're really proud of this game. We think it's fast playing. We think it's deep. We think it's layered. We think it's abstracted in a way so you'll have fun with this in a way that you don't have fun. Or in a different way than having fun playing a computer game. You know, we learned over the years that trying to emulate a computer game or some other medium simulated is not really the appropriate way to try to do a really great licensed board game, card game, whatever, is to actually figure out what's the strengths of that medium and apply it to feeling you're playing Civilization, that you realize that what you're doing is just so different, it's so interesting, so social, that you love doing both, that is playing a computer game and a board game. Another thing we announced, which I'm really excited about, is the Lord of the Rings living card game. I'm a huge Lord of the Rings fan. I don't know if you can get a bigger Lord of the Rings fan. I am not a AAA lore master, but maybe AA, single A, somewhere in there. And I'm just really excited about this game because we've been able to do some board games and designs in the past, but never actually had a direct relationship with Tolkien Enterprises. That has allowed us to really unleash creativity that we always wanted to in that category with the control that we could muster. And what's really exciting about the game, I don't know if you know about the living card game model. I'll have Steve explain that in a second. It's been extremely successful for us. We're really, really happy with it. If you haven't, if you don't know about it, we think you'll love it. But in either case, what's really exciting about the Lord of the Rings LCG is that it's a cooperative LCG. So people like that, so people know, but this is actually a game you can play solo. You can play with your wife, you can play with your husband, you can play with your family, and it's about going on quests together and defeating quests. You ask them, well, what's the replayability after I'm done with it? Well, what now? Well, there's two answers to that. First of all, there's a point system, so you can see how well you defeated it. I mean, if you don't, you score 0 points if you don't make it, which is quite likely. But if you do make it, there'll be a point system that you'll be able to. So we're going to try to create some tools on our website so you can register which quests have you played, how many points have you got in those quests, compare that with your friends, et cetera, et cetera. You can play it, you can train at home. The point system allows us to do some tournament formats with the game that otherwise wouldn't be possible. And obviously, we love the ability to give you new quests. And so we will be producing new quests, and they're so flexible and interesting the way they're put together is that we'll be able to do that. We hope to be able to do some hybrids of that in the league play program we have for it, as well as expansions that are going to come out. So what you'll see in the Lord of the Rings LCG is we're exploring an area of Middle Earth. In this case, it's going to be the Mirkwood, Late Astaroth area. And and we sort of have a thematic amount of quests going on there. In terms of the player decks, they're a little more spread out. You get various personalities and such that you can draw from. But as we grow this card game, because it's living after all, we'll start branching out and really hope to get that sort of sense of exploring Middle Earth, doing things in Middle Earth, interacting with Middle Earth in a way that's very true to the nature of the book. We're also excited, of course, because The Hobbit may be coming out, and that could help us out in getting a little more profile for that game, so hopefully that'll be made. We don't know yet. So those are, did I forget any of the big announcements that we're doing?
Dust Tactics.
Oh, yeah. Just a couple weeks ago, about 4 weeks ago, I think, we were able to reestablish a really awesome relationship with the Dust Games company. There's some history there, going back with some of those guys, because we used to have a relationship with Rackham, which is a miniatures game company. Paulo Parenti and David Freddy, who owns those companies, are really, really great. Great, great guys, very, very talented guys. And they made a series of board games. One of them, Dust Tactics, which is this, has these wonderful mechs and tanks and so on and forth to it. And they were really excited about being able to put in sort of distribution and work with these guys. If there's any questions about that or any of the future plans for that, I'll be happy to talk about that. The other game, of course, that they brought into our stable is the City of Thieves game, and that's been super hot. I recommend you go take a look at it. It has, bar none, in my opinion, the best game plastic miniature gameplay pieces that I've ever seen. This is phenomenal. Those guys are very, very talented. In terms of our releases going into the future, like I said, I have no announcements here today. Are we done for the year? Did we blow everything out? No, we have some cool stuff coming. But last year we did these three black boxes and stuff, and we thought that was really fun. It was my terrible idea, but then what happened is people would just get so mad when what they dreamt in to be that box wasn't necessarily what it was. People were happy. Some people wanted Dune or whatever.
How's that coming?
I'll talk about it later. But we do have some really phenomenal stuff that we have announced for Warmer Pants Roleplay, for example. We'll have more stuff coming up that I think you guys will really, really enjoy. But like I said, we don't really talk about these things until we really feel comfortable that we can show you something, what they are. We can show you some graphics. We can give you some concrete ideas about what's actually going to be entailed. One of the biggest problems in being a small company, which I used to be, and I had to exhibit the exact same behavior, is that there's a tendency to reveal stuff too early because you're excited about an idea. You wake up in the middle of the night and go, I want to do this, and you go out and say, I'm going to put this out next year. And rally sets in, and it doesn't happen for whatever reason, financing, time, artists late, who knows. So in the past, we've worked with some other companies who have made promises about this type of thing, exhibiting this kind of behavior that we have sort of inherited. And so we try to do as good a job as we can to explain that we have taken this game on because we believe in it, because we want to push it forward, because we have a plan for it. But there are promises that made by others which we can't cash. Whether that's the Battle Lore game, which we love, or the Tannhauser game, which we love, et cetera. And I hope there are maybe some questions about that, so we can give you people who are very curious some answers. Do you want to take it next? Or?
Sure.
So I think for just to give Steve a segue, what I'd like him to do is just give you a little rundown of the living card game format that we have, because a lot of people know what it is, but every time we put out a new game, there's a question, it's like, what's that? Is it another trading card game? Is it a collectible card game? And we've spent a lot of effort over the years, 2 years now, to educate people, but it takes time. And Steve is a great proponent and explainer of this topic.
All right. So how many people know what a living card game is? Okay. All right. So living card games, as you know, offer you a really deep, comprehensive play experience. We have organized play. We have leagues. They have a lot of strategy. They don't have collectability. It offers the same experience that a lot of collectible card games do, but without the collectability. You still have the gameplay, the tournaments, the fun. We've got double the amount of players playing in the Game of Thrones Championship today than we did last year, so that's really exciting to see. These games, because of their nature and the way that they're distributed, makes it a lot easier for people to get into and stay into and even play multiple games. So we're very excited about that. And just right before the show started, we announced Lord of the Rings. And not only is that going to be the next chapter in our like living card game family, so it'll be sold in the same type of format. There's going to be a core set that's sold for $39.95 that's going to give you everything you need to play for two players, or if you want to play the game solo. Then there's going to be the monthly expansion packs like we do for all of our other games. You'll get a complete play set for $14.95. Now the twist on this game, as Chris mentioned earlier, this is going to be our first cooperative living card game. I was a little nervous about this, I have to say, from a marketing point of view, as we still are kind of educating people what's the difference between a living card game as opposed to a collectible card game, living card game, standalone card game, and now we're already putting a little twist on that. But the response has really been phenomenal. When you get this game, you're going to be able to, if you want to just play by yourself, see how it works, you can do that. Or as he said, play with a spouse, a friend, family, or a bitter rival. He didn't mention that. But you can do that and play in this really cooperative experience.
I can play with you.
which is really different than our other card games, because the other living card games are competitive head-to-head or group where you're opposing everybody else on the table. This one's going to let you play with your friends. And if you get two core sets and put them together, you can actually play with up to four players cooperatively. And we'll be releasing more quests, like he said, more adventures, more heroes. All the stuff that you love about Lord of the Rings is going to be part of that game. Do you guys have any specific questions about how the living card game format works or any of the games that we have out right now?
I've never played the living card games. I've played most of the board games. Does this have, is it just going to be cards, or is there dice and chips that go with it as well?
So this one is going to, the different living card games have different components to them. For Lord of the Rings, it's primarily card-based, but there's a threat tracker that comes with it to kind of help you keep track of how much danger you're in. But it is a pure card game, yes. But
there's some tokens, too.
There's
like some damage tokens, resource tokens, but there's no dice or anything. It's just a card game.
And there's no board or anything like that. It's a card game experience. Now, some of the other games have more tactile pieces to them, but they're to enhance the gameplay of the card game. They're all, at heart, they're all card games.
So just a couple things I wanted to put out for people who really don't even know what a TCG is that these games are customizable, which means that get some decks in the core set that you can play right out of the box. You can keep playing them forever if you want, but ultimately, what takes this game to the next level is you can put together your own decks and try to find the best solution of a combination of cards with your friends or your family to beat that particular quest. And so it's that kind of puzzle solving strategy at play that sort of allows you to have a greater aspect to the game than just sitting down playing it. There's actually some homework that you can do and you can sit and try to customize them. This is you would a TCG. Also importantly is that we don't always have them in stock, but we will always try to keep the cards in print. So that means that if somebody buys a card and you think it's really awesome, well, maybe in a TCG, that card would not only be hard to find if it wasn't print, sometimes it's not even print, and you can't get it. And so then you have to either suffer underneath the tyranny of more money, or you have to somehow try to, go out and deal with this strategically card-based, and that can be a frustrating experience.
Well, another kind of key difference in that, too, between a trading card game, collectible card game, it sounds silly, but it's not collectible. And the difference in that is the gameplay experiences for a trading card, collectible card game, a lot of times can be frustrating. If you're playing an opponent, you lose because, well, they've just bought 10 times the amount of cards that you have, and they've got to see people shaking their head, and they've got some secret super chase rare that you could only get on the second Tuesday of the fourth month at some event in Iowa, And in this format, all of the cards are offered to everybody the same way. It's, when you buy that core set, you're going to have the same cards that he got when he bought his core set, or she got when she bought her core set. And you're going to play on an even field. So then it gets into the strategy or the puzzle solving that Chris is talking about. Is then the game gets much more about, well, what kind of strategy can you come up with? What kind of tactics can you use because you're playing on an even playing field? And when those monthly expansion packs come out, once again, they're available to everybody. There's no super rare hidden chase cards anywhere for you to track down. Confidently you can get into the game and be on an even footing with everybody, and you're not going to have to keep up with a Mr. Suitcase or card escalation or whatnot. So,
obviously, there's a bunch of layers to the onion that actually makes this really interesting. Think about it on a very sort of business-like level. One of the problems of a TCG is that inherently they cost a lot of money to play, which is great for the card games that make it really big, but there's a lot of wasted money on packaging, and you get a lot of repeat cards, etc. Is that you can typically only play one game. I don't know if here Premier plays multiple collectible card games. It's really hard to keep up with because just the monetary factor and the emotional factor of binge purchasing that you have to do. What we've tried to do with collectible card games is we really love the type of games that you can do with the traditional collectible customizable games. Is that we think you can maybe play multiple games because they're not horribly expensive. What that does is something pretty extraordinary. It actually doubles the player network of other players, because one of the biggest issues that you're going to have when you decide to buy a game another is like, do I have anybody to play this game with? And when you can only play one game, chances are if you go out and try to find another player, is that you're going to have much less chance of doing that than somebody who for a type of game where you can play a multitude of different games. And so that's a very important one of the layers on a higher level, trying to find out how can we make our games more successful. And that is trying to help, inherently in the model,
help you find more players
by having players play more of the different games.
It's the thing about games, you want people to play the games with, right? And we're seeing it working at Gen Con this year. We're seeing people that are entered in both Game of Thrones and Call of Cthulhu, or Warhammer and Call of Cthulhu, or Game of Thrones, that they're playing at least two, if not all three, of the games. So we're very excited about that. I think there was somebody back there that had a specific question.
Yeah. So you said these are coming every month for Lord of the Rings?
Yes.
So it strikes me as a pretty frequent release schedule. I've got two questions, I guess. One is,
sure.
Is why did you guys decide on a monthly release schedule for these expansions? If I wanted to, if I don't get into it now, but I do want to get into it in 18 months, am I going to need to buy the base set and then 18 expansions?
These are great questions. Thank you. And the guy, he does not work for me, by the way. Those are excellent questions.
Okay, so why are we coming out with expansions every month?
It's not because I have a kid that needs to go to college, okay? But the thing is, to know about these expansions is they're very small and they're very bite-sized, okay? You get 20 unique cards in that pack every month, and you get three copies of them, so it's 60 cards total for $14.95. You make one purchase, you have everything that you need to play. Now, you don't have to purchase every one of these if you don't want to, but it does add variety. It kind of, it's the life of the living card game. One of the other key differences between this and the CCGs, for example, is that for a trading card collectible card game, they come out three or four times a year, and they come out with huge sets that could be 200, 300, 400 cards, and you're going to have to spend hundreds of dollars on that set chasing those cards down, all right? And it's kind of like a, almost like a binge experience. It's like going to Vegas and waking up the next morning and going, oh my God, what have I done, right? And then you have to digest all of those cards over the next few months. But by releasing only 20 cards a month, every month, what that does is it keeps the game fresh and alive without giving you that binge experience of, oh man, I have to go sell a kidney this month to get the latest expansion, right?
And what makes it living? I mean, that is the living part of the game, is the constant
month. And so every month, if you want to, there's going to be something a little exciting, something a little bit different for your game that you can add in a little bit of a surprising twist to it. You can solve the puzzle a different way, and it comes out in very bite-sized chunks, right? I mean, it's the same as playing an MMO, right? I mean, the price is very, very reasonable. You can choose whether you're going to engage in it or not. But every month you have something to look forward to it's very affordable. It's also very consumable in the way that it's not going to overwhelm you to try to digest 400 cards over the next couple months. You have a whole month to just go through 20, get them, and then you have another exciting little treat to look forward to next month. So now your second question was, well, gosh, what if it's 18 months from now and you want to get into the game? You buy the core set. The core set is the entry point. You really need that experience to experience the full part of the game. And the other exciting thing about that core set, it is a very self-contained experience. If you just bought the core set and you just wanted to play it as a standalone game, you could play with your friends for years and years to come and have a great experience for that. But if you want to look and you're a completist like I am and go, well, I want this game, there's a core set and there's 18 of these packs, oh my God. Well, you don't have to buy that core set and all 18 of those packs on the same day. And all 18 of those packs are still going to add up to about the same price as maybe one booster display of a CCG. So again, even a year and a half, 2 years down the road, the kind of the price of admission to get into the game to be part of the community is still a fraction of the cost of what it would be for a trading card game. And you can choose how slow or how fast you complete that collection, because as Chris said, we're going to make a special effort to keep those cards available. So you could buy the first three now, or maybe the latest one now, and a few more next month, and one down the line.
I think it's another very important point to this, is that these are not blind buying. You know what's in these packs. You can go online. We could do a better job explaining exactly what's in there. We're working on that. But that means that if you want to play a game and you're wondering, I would really like that, you know, special Gandalf the White or whatever card, you know exactly which pack. You don't have to get all 18. You can get the ones you want. You just, hey, you know, I don't want number 13, 14, 15. I don't like that kind of deck experience. I can go out and get the 17 for me. If you want to own all of them, well, that's great. We love you. But you don't. I think it's a very, very important point. And this was, I think they were great questions.
Yeah. And we release them in cycles. So there are themes that you'll find that appear. So you're not going in and saying there are 18 packs. You can sort of see new keywords or new races or new abilities that come and they sort of help you understand what exactly is offered.
Right. So I think just to reiterate what he was saying is that every cycle has sort of a theme and sort of an encapsulation of an aspect of the game. So you can just get the six in a cycle, and you can sort of...
In a cycle is six packs.
Right. Yeah.
So you have a question.
Yes, I have two questions. First is, what is the release date on this?
We don't speculate on release
dates. I think our canned response for that is check the website for more details.
Yeah,
but as Chris said, we are a lot more disciplined in our marketing, and we do not announce games now until they're further along, and we are doing demos.
I think on the booth we put late fall.
Yeah. So it will be out before Reigns of Power.
My other question is, what is going to be the first station?
We will be announcing that shortly. So there was a guy in the back there that was next to me. Yes, sir.
Just as a thought that occurs to me in the future, especially with Game of Thrones and such games, you're getting into the 6th, 7th cycle of cars. In the future, would you ever think of like taking a cycle and selling that as a bulk set of all 6 sets, or if it's gonna, I don't know, you want to keep them in print and everything, would that be something you all might do?
I can answer that. To answer you truthfully, it's not something we've landed on yet.
Okay.
It takes about, so Game of Thrones is in its 3rd year, I think, which is 36 packs.
Yeah, y'all are in year 6 or 7.
Like, yeah, I mean, so while that's a lot, if you, a lot of other game archetypes, such as miniatures or role-playing games, if you have 36, 40 SKUs in a game, it's not considered to be extraordinarily painful.
Right.
But, you know, we haven't, these games have been alive for about 3 years. They've been growing slowly and actually accelerating. Like last year and this year has been phenomenal. We want to keep, like I said, we want to keep the cards in stock. Right. Does it make sense to have too many SKUs of these things? We don't know. They are pretty competitively priced, so we're not entirely sure how much it's going to help you to have all a whole cycle together, because it may be pretty prohibitive in terms of the price. And if you only want this card or that card, then we also that becomes a negative, because you're also having to buy a lot of cards you don't want.
Yeah,
so these are the things that are going through our minds in order when we're thinking about it. But it is something, it's a very important question, because it is something that we're looking into. Yeah. And ultimately, how many packs are we going to do? The limited card game to us is a monthly thing. Will it ever happen that we will maybe decide that one game should go every other month, because it's just been on so long? That's a possibility. Like I said, we haven't landed on anything.
Sure. I think the big takeaway from that is that we're charting new ground with this, right? So as you said, we're exploring a lot of different possibilities, and we're with like Game of Thrones, Call of Cthulhu, we're in like the 3rd year of those, and the exciting thing is we're still seeing the games grow. What that's going to look like in year 4, year 5, year 8, we're just not sure yet, right? And I think that's another important follow-up to your question, actually, is the fact that a Game of Thrones is in its 3rd year now as a living card game, and not only is the attendance at Gen Con doubled this year, sales are still growing, right? And if any of you have experience with collectible games, you know it kind of has this decline curve where a game will come out really big, and then each release it sells a little bit less, a little bit less. With the living card games, what we're finding is we're seeing some slow, steady growth over the years instead of decline. So we think we have the model right. Can we predict the future? No, not yet. So,
I have a question about the packaging strategy. So after Warhammer Invasion came out, after the first cycle, you decided to go for the very recommendable 60 card packs, where you have 3 copies of every card, mm-hmm. instead of having to, if you really want to play competitively, and the audience invasion kind of game usually wants to play competitively, basically buy 3 copies of them. Mm-hmm. Is that a strategy that you will employ down the line for new core sets and new expansion sets as well?
Okay, so no. If you're a really, really competitive player,
you will
probably want to buy 3 core sets, because there's a really important polarizing issue in the core set. We can either provide you with lots of variety or with 3 of each card.
Yeah.
And for us, it's just so much more important that core set provides you with a variety of lots of different cards, a lot of different strategies, than for us to give you a third of that and give you all the competitive card sets.
And one of the key reasons for that is stipulate once again that core set is something, if you choose to, you could buy one and just play that as a standalone game for years and years to come. But if we included 3 copies of every single card to make it as cutthroat competitive as possible, the variety of the gameplay experience just wouldn't be there, number one, and to make the number of viable decks you can get out of it, it would be prohibitively expensive as well.
Like I said, it's very important for us that these core sets are, we sort of treat them like we would a normal board game or card game. and you can open them up and you can have a lot of play with it. You know, I mean, I would say all of those games play as well as most other $40 standalone games out there. However, your question was some of the expansions in terms of, because we also release twice a year for the newer games, deluxe expansions. And in general, they will have three of each card. In general. Now, there's an exception, for example, for Warhammer Invasion, where we released an expansion called Siege of Ulthuan. The issue with this game is that we actually released two additional factions to the game, and they needed the variety of cards more so than they needed the triplicate. So that's kind of a hybrid small starter set. And so we're going to, you know, we're going to evaluate whatever we think is best for the customer in terms of a variety of gameplay.
So the second deluxe set you released has three copies of each card?
The March of the Damned has three copies of each card, yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
I thought it was
correct. Three. Don't buy three.
Yeah.
Or whatever you do, please.
The monthly packs, will those include new quests and adventures, or are those separate expansions that will come out separately? Or is that for me?
I'm gonna have to get back to you on that one. We have nailed something, but does that mean it can't change last minute? Always the issue for something like this is that we try as much as we can not to have people purchase repeat stuff that only one of them. So that's where we're sort of going back and forth on what's the best option to provide you with more quests. Sorry, I should stand up so I can see what I'm talking about. And so I think you're going to have to just stay tuned. Fair enough, that answers the question.
I was just wondering if you're going to have any sort of like pre-release support for Lord of the Rings as like an organized tournament in local stores, like Wizard says, release events in local stores.
Pre-release, no. We're looking into different, you know, release party options.
Okay.
Can you tell a bit about organized play for the Living Card Games?
Sure, I can. Yes. So, much like collectible games, you know, people love that to get involved. Card games are a lot about community, so we run organized play as well. But we have some different levels of it. It's kind of taken us a while to start hitting some of the formats correctly. I think we've made some real strides in the last year. There will be more. We're working on some more ambitious plans that I can't talk about today. But what we do offer at this time is we offer kits that we call game night kits. They can be used in a variety of different ways. How you're going to see these come out, especially as we move forward, is it will come with a set of suggestions of, well, if you want to use this as a league for your players, here's how we suggest that you do it. If you want to use it as a series of unrelated tournaments, this is how we suggest you do it, and that kind of thing. So it'll come with some prize support and some game aids, and they usually also come with an achievement booklet that we've gotten very, very good response about. And the achievement booklet kind of allows people from different skill levels to still be involved in the same community, because some of these achievements are pretty easy to accomplish, some somewhat harder, and there's a few that are semi-impossible to do, right? So there's some pretty cool bragging rights about in that. So they're kind of an all-purpose kit that we're trying to get out on a quarterly basis for each game, so that in a particular quarter, a store could go through probably about two of those, and people have a really good time with them before then there's something fresh and new and different for them to play with. Then we also do for each game, we have regional events where we set out a schedule of a certain time of year and say, okay, over this 8-week period, we're going to have these regional events. The prize packs are much more robust, have a lot more stuff in it. We also try to not only just have big prizes for the champion, but in the game night kits and these regionals, also some cool participation prizes. So again, it's all about the community. So if you know if you're going to show up, you're going to get something kind of fun and cool associated with the game that you like.
I think very specifically, what we try not to do with LCGs is we try not to really focus it too much on the really hardcore competitive tournament environment. That's not to say we don't have it, but we don't consider these games to be, you know, that's how we're going to sell them to competitive players, because in our experience, if you take that too far, with money prizes and all that stuff, then you get some pretty unpleasant gaming experiences, and that's not really what we're all about. We do a
a series of tournaments, and you have a pretty rich structure for those. Do you want to?
The regionals,
when we get up to the game nights can be as casual or competitive as you really want them to be. When we get up to regionals, though, there are some more stricter rules so that we make sure, because people travel for longer distances for regionals and worlds, and we want to make sure that you understand the play experience you're going to have when you get there. I don't want someone to drive 2, 4, 8, 12 hours, whatever, to an event and go, well, this isn't what I thought it was going to be. So regional tournaments, we have about a half dozen or so around North America, and then we'll have some internationally as well, but normally internationally it's only one per country. Those events are going to morph into a title for a national title for the international folks. They'll stay called regionals for us.
There is one regional tournament per region per year.
Yes. There's a few exceptions. There's a couple exceptions to that. Sometimes in some regions that are so populous or so big, there might be more than one, but generally it's one per region. And like I said, we will announce what the format of that is when we announce the event, what the guidelines are, and how those need to be run. So that if you drive 7 hours, you're not going to get there and go, well, I didn't bring a deck that conformed to that. Now what do I do, right? So you're going to know the experience you get. And then to top it off, we have World Championships events here at Gen Con. And that's, for especially the real competitive players, that's where they can really jump in. And again, we announce the format, all the guidelines and rules months in advance so that you know what kind of experience you're going to get when you come here to play. Okay.
So I think we're good. I think if you have any more questions about living card games, we were really happy to talk to you at the booth. Find Steve, find Anton. Or go out to the card hall and discuss it among them.
I just have one question. You mentioned the Blood Bowl drafting game, but it wasn't announced on the website.
Yes,
it is on the website. It is on the website.
Yes. I know, but you didn't discuss it.
Oh.
Well, we're not there yet.
Oh, okay.
That's not a living card game.
Well, I know.
Okay. All right, so living card games are now gone. They discussed wonderfully. Essentially, I'm done. I don't have any more things to say. What I really would like to do is just answer any questions you may have, however hard or easy.
I know that there's the store up in Rosemont for like a year or so.
Roseville.
Yeah. I wonder if that's how that's been going, and if it's been successful. Is retail something you want to do, or is this just sort of a fun?
Okay. So first of all, it's not a retail. We call it the event center. Does it have a retail component? It does. It is located very, very close in proximity to our company, and we do it for three reasons. Reason number one is it provides a place to have events. So it provides a place where we can say, hey, come and have the regionals for a living card game in the Midwest at our event center. It allows us a place, because there is a retail component to it and a play component, where we can actually interface with real retail customers every day. And we can figure out what are some of the challenges that the retail base face. Like, for example, one thing in setting it up, we realized how useful it would be for retailers to have CSV data of all of our products. So that's something we're trying to put in place. And it's also, for the morale of our staff. We have 72 staff, and they're all gamers, and they love to go somewhere and play, and frankly, our offices are not that exciting. They're offices. And so we want to create this beautiful environment that we felt was our physical representation of what we think gaming is all about. And we also are able to do play tests there. It's an R&D, it's morale building. And it's also an experimental facility that we intend to share with retailers. So if we find some, great tool to somehow, make the game experience or their sales experience or whatever something greater, we intend to share all our experiences with the center after 1 year. It started in March this year. So it's actually only been open for, 4 months, 5 months, something like that. And so far, so good. But it's just early still. But inherently, it's not, we're not looking to go into retail worldwide. If it works really well, maybe we'll put an event center in France and one in England or something like that. I mean, that's the type of notion that we have. retail is not really our expertise.
If anybody ends up anywhere near the Twin Cities in Minnesota, you owe it to yourself to swing by.
So it's open to the public. I mean, yeah, it's got hours yeah. and
just six days a week. Monday is the one day of the week that it's closed, and it's open until 1 a.m. every night except Sunday. And people come in and walk in, play pickup games. Some people check out games from the library with a membership. It's a place that
One of the things that we're doing with this with the event center is the idea of membership, because it's the idea that we wanted to experiment with. We believe that physical places are of value to gamers, maybe more so today than the actual place to buy the games, because there's so many options to buy the games. So why not provide them with a physical place where that they could meet, where they could have really nice facilities and so on, but they pay a membership fee. And I think it's $100 a year, but you can splice that down into lesser brackets. So I guess like $20 a month or $100 a year or something like that.
Options.
And that gives you all sorts of options that you can reserve private gaming rooms. You can get a small discount on the merchandise.
You can play a game library.
Oh yeah, you can check out any games in the library that you want. There's a number of I forget all of this, like 10 different kind of good things. We want to experiment with health clubs certainly make it work somehow, you know. So we'll call ours brain clubs or something.
So seeing playing games is healthy.
look at the long view. It's been open for 4 months. We have a lot of aspirations. Our business plans are 90 pages long for what we're trying to accomplish with it, and those are the three. It's employee morale, learning what our partner retailers are facing every day, and trying to have a place where we can have events and where customers can come every day and interface with that.
So when he talks about the events, we run about 4 or 5 major events there a year.
Speaking of which,
upcoming in October, we're running an event called Arkham Nights. So if you love Call of Cthulhu, Arkham, any of that stuff, right, it's going to be a 3-day celebration event. There'll be a costume contest Saturday night, all of that kind of stuff, almost like a little mini Gen Con. 4 or 5 times a year. So
yeah, I mean, like I said, Arkham Knights is all about our Lovecraft stuff, right? And we're gonna have a costume contest, and it's gonna be all very, very well done Lovecraftian weekend, right? And we can hold about 120, 150 people there.
Yeah.
And then 3 weeks later, we're gonna have Days of Ice and Fire. You may be aware that we are really strong partner with George Martin, who does the Game of Thrones, Ice and Fire series of books, and we have several games in that. The living card game, board game, we do these art books for it, and we just launched the Battles of Westeros tabletop board game. And George will be there, and who knows, maybe there'll be some things about the HBO show, who knows.
All right. We got a question in the back.
Yeah, one of the things that you guys do a fantastic job of production, and so give you a heads up, great on that. So whenever you guys do the miniature games, you know, like Battlemore or the War of the Rings, some of those, that quality doesn't seem to be there on the miniature pieces. Like, I mean, because I'm a retailer, you buy the game and then they're saying, hey, wait, you know, like in the Battle of London, look at the paper to say you might need glue. If, you know, wait, I just bought a board game, I might, you know, I don't want to glue crap together. Same thing with that, we saw in the more of the green one, we saw a lot of pieces fall break out of box.
Which one?
The gigantic
Middle Earth West,
sorry.
Yeah, okay. Well, those are two different issues. One thing that I think with Battles of Westeros is the one we represent, we say, hey, some of these may not fit in exactly. There's a lot of engineering reasons for that. But I think we made a mistake of not putting that right in the middle of it, maybe even in the back of the box. Because in my opinion, it's just a matter of disclosure. And that's why I put that piece of paper in there, because we realized that, you know, some of these will be a little loose, because there is, when plastic pools and stuff in the molds, there are just limitations. And we don't think our customers really mind gluing some of these pieces. One thing these people should know, one of the great misconceptions about manufacturing is that gluing pieces and painting figures is inexpensive and something that's done casually, and it's hugely expensive to you. So we would rather say, hey, we can charge you $15 more, $10 more to glue the damn figures, or we can provide you with the figures that you can just dabble with yourself. It'll take you, you know, 5 minutes. Because remember that for that labor cost involved, there's a lot of people, including yourself, the retailer, who wants to make the markup on that labor cost. And so, well, we always err on the side of something like that. We say, well, let's put more value in the box of other things. In this particular case, I think we made a mistake in that we should have realized that there was a sufficient, I mean, about 75% of them don't need glue. But in my mind, that was a disclosure problem. But unacceptable one. So, that's what we're going to do in the future for those things. We're going to say you may have to glue some of these pieces, and this is a hobby industry. So if you don't want a board game that you don't want to glue pieces for, don't buy it. But at least you'll know, right? That's the real issue to me. Middle-Earth Quest was an issue. That was a manufacturing problem. Those should not have broken. I can give you a long, sad story about how this came about. I mean, we check quality control samples, but there's many, many, many factors involved. The type of plastic, the PVC 120 versus 100, 190. And in this particular case, the manufacturer packed them and made them out of too brittle of the plastic, and we essentially had to do a massive replacement program. So if you bought a Middle Earth Quest and your figure's broke, we have new ones for you, and we send them to you free of charge, no questions. Sometimes this happens. There's just, you know, we do 300 productions a year, and sometimes it's a problem. We hate it, but we will, when it happens, we'll do everything we can to fix it.
Yeah,
well,
that's what we have. Most all our players, I mean, that's the one thing they always say about the past, like, nine out of the time, it's like, wow.
And then we really wish that these mistakes don't happen, and we're not perfect, but we, you know, we learn from that. And we're not going to repeat, or if we repeat, somebody will be in trouble. We're not going to repeat the Middle Earth Quest problem. That's not going to be another whole unpredictable problem.
I mean,
if anyone ever has issues that they need to get in contact with customer support, you can go to fantasyflightgames.com/customer-service, and there's an entire website. You've got all sorts of links and emails and forms. Regardless of the issue, there's plenty there. We definitely want you to contact us.
Every single game will have a tolerance of error because of the complexity of components. It's about 2%. Is about what factories and everybody else. We actually get overshipment by our games. We demand more product free, so we have replacement parts for you. Because we know that in those 10,000 games or 2,000 games, 2% of those games, they're going to have some flaw because the accounting machine went out of pot. I mean, there's so many things that can go wrong. We have four games. That's one of the ones that's so hard to do. It's because there's so many components that go into it, and so many different processes and so on. So there will be, as a natural tolerance, 2% of error. One of the problems with the internet is if you have one of those errors, you're going to go, I have an error in my game. It's terrible. I hate you. And then also it looks like that, you know, that they're all broken, right? But there is a tolerance of error. So just if you see something, yes, be concerned. Try to check around. If you know 100 people that own the game and you just happen to have those two, that of course, it's upsetting if you're missing a key piece to your piece. I mean, you buy the game, you just want to go home and play it, and you can't. It's really frustrating. And the retailer usually can't help you. But I mean, some retailers are great because they will go and they'll open another game and they'll give you the component, and they will then contact us and they'll send it back to the distributor, and there's a number of different ways to fix it. But a lot of times the retailer may not have that extra game, or we're not going to do that, or for whatever reason. I mean, we realize that it's a terrible letdown that we have. That's why we have tasked our customer service department with just help everybody as fast and as helpful as you can with this stuff. So sometimes we make mistakes, and sometimes manufacturing issues happen, like in North Quest, so that's an issue. And sometimes we should probably have disclosed better that glue was needed in your second example. Does that answer your question?
Yes.
From Brogan.
Just because it's an all-time personal favorite of mine, kind of came for a shot now. Have you ever had your eye on the ball of Warhammer Fantasy Quest?
Well, one thing that's generally well known, and this is the fact, is that we love Games Workshop stuff. We're a partner for them for board games, card games, role-playing games. And if a game is essentially about the miniatures, then we're not going to do it. That's a miniature game. And so there are some games that are, you know, they're a little bit, in the gray area. But generally, if they're in the gray area, it's a no.
Yeah.
So that's so. And
you know, I can't speak for what happened in the future, but I think we disclosed when the deal was done explicitly that games like Space Hulk and Warmer Quest and stuff like that are not part of our
fall more toward the
Are we going to see more Games Workshop IP?
What do you think?
Hope so.
Nah, we did it all now, so of course. I mean, we absolutely love IP. It's Games Workshop has done such a great job over the last 30 years of just drilling down and developing it in the story and the aspect and sort of the true nature of it. And so there's so many things we can do, and we just got started.
What about some of the older properties like Curse of the Mummies 2 and stuff like that?
Check the website for free.
Right. The thing to do is I mean, one thing to keep in mind now is that we've been publishing for the slices for about 2.5 years now, and some of the low-hanging fruit probably has been picked, you know, in terms of the obvious things that we would do. And so what really excites us is some of the non-obvious things that we can do. Like Space Hulk, the card game was the one thing, you know. It's really exciting to be able to say Space Hulk is an awesome aliens type of thing, right? And to be able to do a card game that sort of reflects that atmosphere, but plays utterly different, it's a totally different game than the thing. It's really exciting. There's so many aspects to Games Workshop, but the way that they handle those properties, the way they handle those properties is so clever in the way that you can explore segments of it. Like we have our role playing games, for example, and there's a really interesting mix of freedom that we have there, and also of course constraint of licensing constraint. But I can tell you that the ideas are so plentiful for the categories that we have that you should not worry about any Games Workshop IP stuff going missing. In fact, we've been accused of too much of that, you know, but I think that's unfair. I think you should be looking for that in the future. Is that a good thing? I sent you a pretty sex sentence. All right, how do you gentlemen then?
Yeah, well, just to make a couple of points earlier, your customer support is fantastic. So you have Powell. Oh, sorry, I got it.
That's actually my pen name.
Oh, it is. Well,
Fat Paul, she is awesome.
Yeah, she's really good response and all that.
Yeah, she's good.
The question I have is, now that Battleborn's become kind of an umbrella for your that kind of X combat kind of stuff, I know, you know, we've heard that there will be continued support for the fantasy branch of it or whatever and that, but I mean, that's, I guess I just kind of want to hear that from you guys. That is,
okay,
no,
yeah.
Specifics, it just.
Are we going to continue to support the Battle of Brand? Absolutely. Will there be more stuff coming out for the current, you know, existing Battle or yes, that you haven't heard of yet? Does that mean that there isn't some challenges with Battle or? No, there is. We acquired Battle or. 2 years ago now, and it was a relatively quick deal. It was a great deal for us. It wasn't really, but I think Days of Wonder had other, you know, fish to fry, and so we took it over, and certainly it was not a bad business decision. Just based on, I can't disclose those details, but certainly we were not under the expectation that the state of the engineering, the state of the just the artwork files, and there's a significant amount of issues involved that really are just going to sound like a sad sob story if I tell you what they are, but they take a lot of time to sort of unwind. One example, the way that the molds were put together for the core Battlefield game, they're actually made in such a way that they printed that game and made the first 5 expansions at the same time. So that means if I have a mold of like some warriors or whatever from the original Battlelore, maybe there are only like 5 figures on the mold. And maybe I have some other gnomes and goblins or whatever, dwarves and goblins. And so if I want to pick the core set, I have to take up a huge amount of time on a plastic injection machine just to get those 5 figures. And that makes them very, very expensive on the basis of the time of the machine. And this is just one of, you know, 25 things that we had to face. And so that's what we said. Number one, cost of
increased pretty dramatically since 2005. We work so hard on trying to circumvent that for a variety of different reasons. We try to, you know, use our economy to scale. We try to print international brings together to do that. The way we try to organize our moles. There's a number of different ways that we try to maximize the value. Battlelore's issue right now is the core game is really not possible for us to put out in any meaningful way for some of the reasons that I mentioned. And so we are slowly curing a plan for how to resolve that. And I think that most Battlelore fans would be pleased. I can't say what it is because it's not. But I mean, I would look for some more support from us. And one thing that I can promise you is that whatever happens is that you will always be able to use your Battlelore game and the figures that we have, even going forward, if there's a new edition or whatever. So does that help you? Richard has put out a lot of plans and stuff, and that we sort of, this is one of those things we inherited from another company, and we can't talk about our plans there, but what we can say, you should pretty much get what you've heard. That doesn't mean that anything cool is not happening, but it means that your expectations may be misplaced with us. That does not mean we don't care, or that we're not going to do something that's going to be great. But it will probably not be the way that it was presented by Richard or by Isabel. Sorry.
Kind of going back to what you were talking about earlier with producing value for the figure. Love Arkham Horror, love the new miniatures. Is there any chance of like a complete set of unpainted ones that might come in as like,
I can't speculate on that right now. I'm sorry.
Just throwing that out there. I think that would be appreciated by them.
Stay tuned. Get your next. Go ahead.
Speaking of the miniatures, I have two parts. One, you guys ever look at Board Game Geek to see some of the painted miniatures, like for Runebound and some of
the they're awesome. Yeah, they do. They're fantastic. We love it. I mean, that's one of the first things I try before we come up with a new game, like this, before these Battles of Westeros. Some awesome guys are out there painting those things up. It's great. But yeah, we love it. Yeah, we look at it all the time. I do. Yeah.
Yeah.
Second part is softball question. Of all your products or game lines over the years, what has surprised you the most in popularity? Quietly surprised you?
For me?
Yeah.
Clearly, in my opinion, Wings of War. The Wings of War game. I like war games. I'm a big World War II buff. Not so much World War I. We took that in. War games were not really selling very well, but we love the game style. And you know what I'm talking about? War of the Ring. It's the World War I aviation. Not so much. Wings of War. The Wings of War.
Five games.
Too many wars and wings and all that stuff. Anyway, that took us by surprise. Honestly, we were just blown away by that. You know, we took in a fairly conservative amount, and it was poof, they're gone. And we've sort of been able to stabilize supply now, unless you want the Red Baron. You can't. And that's what people saying, why don't you make more Red Baron? Well, this comes back to some of the same molding issues, though it's not of our control, because Nexus, our partner, is actually the designer of those. And the Red Baron happens to be in a mold with 12 other planes, and it's not really feasible for us to make him by himself, at least right now.
Speaking of Nexus, I had a chance to demo the Battle of Napoleon game, and the production value is very good, so I don't know if does Nexus, are they responsible for the production, or is that what you guys handle? It very much looks like a fantasy play.
Yeah, I wondered that too. I have to go and talk to Nexus about that a little bit. No, I'm kidding. That particular game was handled almost exclusively by Nexus. Not to be clear, we work very, very closely with them. So we use some of the same manufacturers. We share some of our secrets together. And so if you look at a game like War of the Ring or Battles of Napoleon and so on and so forth, we underpin essentially the world in terms of getting them produced. But it being that the English language is the one that can take the volume needed to get all those fixed costs taken care of. But more or less, they are responsible for that sculpting. I think about Napoleon specifically is an interesting example, because I do believe, you can check with Nexus, they're here in the booth, you can ask them. I do believe that one of their partners in Italy is a company called Italieri, who used to be, still are, they make little, model airplane kits, and there used to be much bigger deal, model airplane kits and little soldiers and stuff used to be a big deal. And so they actually have a lot of these molds for the Napoleonics. So they're able to harness the power of those old ones, modify the molds so they fit the board game. And that's how they're able to get some pretty extraordinary variety of sculpts in Battles of Napoleon. But if you have any specific questions about Battles of Napoleon, we are more on the business side of that.
It's kind of a follow-up to some of the miniature comments. I'm one of the folks that paint up some of the models. I come from the miniature wargaming side. And Westeros is phenomenal. I don't know how you get the detail on some of the tabards and the shields and the plastics. It was amazing. I had a great time painting, but as a miniature gamer, I don't mind gluing the bases together. So from that side, it's really, really affordable compared to Games Workshop and Privateer Press. But I can see why the board gamers come across, and they may not be old enough to remember back in the day we had to clip off the plastics for Axis and Allies, and it should come all ready to go for me. How do you find yourself walking that fine line between the miniature board gamers, the miniature gamers getting attracted to your stuff, but the board gamers maybe being sort of like, whoa, this is too much work?
Most of our games are you know, we have certain games that are more or less casual board games or board games in the more traditional sense, but a lot of our games, especially the games that we, you know, form our whole line around, are more of a lifestyle game, more akin to a miniatures game. So the complexity involvement and involved in those typically are not conducive to somebody worrying about that when they buy it. There's something, again, I can't speak for everyone that has done this, but I know, for example, Twilight Imperium we put out was in spruce, right? I mean, and we haven't, although people have told war stories about flipping them out, nobody said that ruined my whole game experience for me. And I think, frankly, just for example, Battle of Westeros is significantly easier to do than flipping out Twilight Imperium. Once again, it's a matter of expectations, you know, and I certainly feel if there's enough reason for disclosure, like don't buy this game if you don't like cutting out sprues or something, you know, there must be a level where we should disclose and where we shouldn't, and like I said, with Battles of Westeros, it may have been a good idea for us just to say, hey, it requires some assembly. But I don't typically hear complaints like that.
It's a big head in our group.
Yeah.
Anything else?
Hopefully it's worth it.
Bueller, you want to?
Sorry. One last one. I'm wondering, I saw that Cavalon and Dusk Tactics were, I think they were originally like offered by AEG or something like that, weren't they? And then suddenly all like kind of switched over here with you guys.
Because we're awesome. We know John very well from AEG, and he has a lot of irons in the fire. And he has some really great stuff going on, and we have some resources that apply a little bit better to those type of productions, and so we made a very mutual beneficial deal to take those over, and I think we've done a great job of getting the information out there, and we've done videos and marketing, and the websites have come up. These guys said that, you know, two or three weeks before, 4 weeks before Gen Con, the marketing team is crazy busy. So, and then I come and say, hey, guess what, guys? We got two huge big deals coming out. And they aren't particularly happy with me. And also, so they stay late and they get it done. And they play the games to learn them. And they understand what's cool about them.
That made it really easy in this case. And both games were a hit when they hit the table. So it was like, one, holy crap, we got a ton of things to take care of. And the first day, I remember, all right, here are the boxes. And we're like, oh, we got to stay after. And then 3 hours later, like, all right, we're in, you know. If you haven't played it, they're demoing all.
And please make sure to ask Anton who won the last game of Dust Tactics when we played.
And it's not unusual for us to... it's not unusual for us to sort of partner up with a different company on a more business level. For example, we do we have a lot of business activities with Cypher Studios and the Anima Makers game. We have a business relationship. Nexus, I watch their stuff, which I think frustrates them sometimes when they really love basketball. They go, "Basketball is so awesome! They designed this game so well, right?" Well, we didn't really design it. Nexus did, but we'll pass it on. So we have a quite significant experience, you know, going back to the Rackham days with some of this material, and particularly with what could be done differently with Dust Tactics, for example.
Anyone else?
I guess we already know the answer on this, but Tides of Iron Rising Sun expansion. Any chance we'll be seeing that in the next year or so?
Keep looking at the website for more details.
There are two lines that I feel we have sort of let down a little bit. One is Tide of Iron, and one is Tannhauser. Tide of Iron, can only blame ourselves because that's our product. Tannhauser is a product we acquired, and the company that acquired was one of those very young companies, two guys dreaming up stuff, announcing stuff left and right, and really without anything to really back up with. And then we inherit that sort of level of anticipation and expectation. Tide of Iron is one of my personal favorite things that we do. But there has been some big problems with a variety of different aspects. So Fury of the Bear is the big Russian expansion. It's going to be a big box, and each product is a pretty big thing to tackle. And so there was a variety of different things, and we had really big problems with the plastic in that game. We're probably done, but for some reason we couldn't get anything from the tanks to look right, to the wheels of the AT guns, and there were just big problems, and we don't want to go out and tell you guys top stories about what's not out and this and that. I mean, we don't know really when it's going to be fixed. But we certainly, the idea we have Tide of Iron is more or less to put out a supporting product of some substance a year. And are there others coming out? Are we playing others? Yes, because we love it. That's about as much as I can say about it. But Fury of the Bear is you can actually see some of the plastic and stuff down at the booth. And Fury of the Bear should be out some point in time this year. I may have just got myself in trouble. But this year, and we're really, really committed to it. That is one game that just have had bad luck. Just in terms of anything from vacations to different priority to plastic to, and ultimately I just wanted to do a really good product. And us sending it back sometimes, saying, "Hey, this isn't good enough." I sent it back, for example, because I thought the boards looked like crap. I wanted really cool looking boards for the Russian front, and what we got was crap. So that delayed the month and a half. I don't know anything about sons.
Anything else?
Did you guys ever consider including the card sleeves in with the games? Just because it's someone who goes to local game store, sometimes they don't have those in there. And those card sleeves are fantastic. I love that they fit all that kind of stuff, especially for like Chaos in the Old World, but it's hard to find them sometimes.
The reason they're hard to find is because that's our fault. Because we ran out, we had no idea how popular it would be, and so we ran out, and our manufacturer, there was another issue, but that was our fault. We don't want to put them in the games because even though you want to use them as sleeves, and I do, we don't want to force feed them to people who don't want sleeve of cards because they do increase the cost of the game. So what should happen is you get a game, and if you choose to do so, you should be able to get sleeves readily.
Yeah.
And the fact that you weren't able to is our mistake, and we're going to try to fix it. Yeah. Anything else? Anybody have any role-playing questions?
Question. You recently said on the website that you were in your summer catalog, you said that you're releasing a lot of the guidebooks that are going to allow for like tokenless play of Warhammer Fantasy
Roleplay. Warhammer Fantasy Roleplay.
I just want to know if you could discuss like the tokenless aspect and why you made that decision.
The ideal place to go for that answer, and I'll answer
it, but the real expert in this is Jay Little, and he has a seminar
today. Today.
It already happened?
Friday at 3. Is it the Vicious seminar?
Okay, so Warhammer Fantasy Roleplay was very controversial because what we decided to do was to create a role-playing game that actually had a very strong visual and tactile aspect to it. And the reason that we did this is because we love role-playing games. And we want to try to do something that really was fun and interesting and would appeal to a whole different range of gamers. And this has actually worked. We've had so many people come back to us saying, I quit role-playing, blah, 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 and I saw this and it was just so fun. But of course, there's a large amount of role players who very validly don't like that approach and they love Warhammer Fantasy Roleplay. So after about, it's been about 8 months now, we've actually, you know, we've sold out several of the releases. We're reprinting them right now. It's really been a great success for us, but we do hear a lot of people say, I don't want to this or that for a number of different reasons. One of those problems is that to get into the game, you have to buy this big core set, which is an amazing amount of value in there. It's $100, which is not a small price point, but if you look at all the stuff in there, it's just mind-blowing where you put in there. But if you, and that would support a game master and three players, but if you're player number four, what do you do? Do you have to go buy another $100 product and get all this stuff for four players? Okay, so there was some granularity issues with that, say, okay, so we have to try to address these. Then there are the issues of people saying, you know, I just don't like these bits and so on and so forth. We believe the bits are an inherent part of the game, but some people may want to try a variation to try without. Now, we are not inherently going to make this a chitless, cardless game. We are going to provide some tools and some, I myself call them the light rules, but not light because they're lesser rules, but because they're less heavy with stuff.
It's really about giving you more options.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. So there's been some really great questions about Warhammer Fantasy Roleplay stuff. Some people think that they will, so what we're doing to address this is we're putting out three books, The Player's Guide, GM's Guide, and The Creature Guide. First of all, The Creature Guide is basically all new stuff, so there's no worries about that. And then each of these books have a companion box called The Vault. And what The Vaults contain is basically a player set of components. So if I'm that fourth player and I want to play, well, I can now go and get this $40 box full of my stuff, rather than go and have to buy the $100 box. So it's actually us trying to save you money and unnecessary components. We're not trying to sabotage you in doing that. The Player's Guide rule booklet will include all the rules. There's some criticism of some of the rules, whether they're valid or not. We've gone back and said, okay, let's see what people are saying about these. Remember that for a role-playing game that's so new and different, sometimes, you know, we first time we're doing it, and maybe there are things that can be done better once we have, you know, 10,000 pairs of eyes look at it. So we said, yeah, there's a couple things in here that could be clarified and done better. So the rules have been somewhat rewritten in order to sort of, you know, improve that experience, but there's nothing in the player book inherently that's not in the core set. What you can use it for is as another rule book, because a lot of people don't like sharing the rule booklet around if they want to look up stuff. So now you have the option, again, on the granular purchase to get another rule booklet. What it does have, that is new, I guess, is that we've included lookup tables for all the components. Okay, that doesn't mean all the content of all the stuff that we put out of the Gathering Storm, of Winds of Magic, of the player, the Adventurer's Toolkit. That all those things are all suddenly now worthless because they're replicated as books. It's not true. There's a lot of little tables for you to summarize all the stuff that you have. But it's not. It doesn't provide a substitute for those other releases. The GM's book is sort of similar. It allows you to, if you just want to sort of see what it's like to be a GM in this game, you can get the book, you can get the vault, and you don't have to invest in the bigger box. If you are a new group and you decide, us four guys, we want to start playing Mark Hansen Roleplay, you should buy the core set. You should buy the back of the main box. What we've done is we just sort of listen to people say, hey, I have to buy all these core sets. I don't want to do that. How can I, you know, have a different solution for that? And we provided that solution.
And we've then also decided that since so many people have asked us if we could do this without these little, some of the tokens and stuff, we said, well, if you want to run it light, here is a variant of the game, a suggestion for how to do that. So that is a far cry from just changing the game. We were simply providing some thought, some suggestions, some options for you to do this. The future supplements will not be split in components and content. We're going to produce some supplements as we have been, so it's a box with books and components and so on. So it is definitely, we're staying on target. It's successful. It's awesome. Are we providing players with more options? Absolutely we are, or at least we hope to be. So we've had some people be very worried that their acquisition somehow was relegated to nothing because of these new books, or that we're changing course or whatever. And sometimes it's hard for us to do good, what we think is good, and not somehow cause damage. Fortunately, you can go down and see there's some mock-ups of those vaults and books down at the booth now that came in this morning. So you can go see what they look like. But does that sort of give you, that's a good question that I would like to have answered, because I know there's some questions about that online. So if you have the core set, the answer is you don't need to buy the player's guide, the player's vault, the GM's guide, and the team's vault. You've got it all, unless you want some lookup tables.
I have a general question. So how does the gaming market look like over the last 10 years, especially with the economy the way it is now? What are you guys seeing? I mean, you guys seem to be doing really well. Do you see the hobby shop? Do you see the hobby shop doing well out there? Do you seem to surviving? What do you see happening?
I can only speak from my perspective of this. Are there any retailers here? Retailers just jumping down here. Maybe we should ask him about the retail environment. And from our experience, the retailers we talk to, the effect of the financial crisis 2008 to today has not been exceptionally severe. Some people argue that games and hobbies are inferior goods and that they actually grow when the economy shrinks. We've never seen that to be the case because we've also grown when the economy was going up. So I think a little bit we're macroeconomic agnostic. To a certain extent, we're much more affected by technology, I would say World of Warcraft probably made a bigger impact into the retailers than the financial crisis did. I do think that, with one exception that I bring up, but back in 2001, there was another recession, and this recession collided with, it was a tech bubble crash, and there was a global, you know, the terrorist attacks and so on. When the tech bubble crashed, the IT crowd was laid off in huge numbers. And we have found, at least from our perspective, is that the IT industry has a large amount of gamers in it. And so what happened then is there was a significant amount of people that buy board games and card games that also had less money. And so we actually felt that actually affected gaming shops more because of that very specific person, the IT technician or whatever that was in financial trouble. There's also an impression that this crisis has affected a lot of different people, very unfortunately. Maybe the tech sector has been okay, and so maybe that's also why it hasn't affected us as much. Have you had any reaction to the economy?
We're starting to see a slight upturn again. Role-playing games really took that, especially with World of Warcraft. But it's starting to come back a little bit. We're starting to get a little more requests for some of the other role-playing games that are coming out. D&D's been fairly consistent. Board games just really shot up. I'm expanding my whole board game section. So
thank you.
I mean, stuff that I've had sitting around for a year, all of a sudden people are starting to pick up and buy, and I'm just like, whoa, okay, great. Let's start getting new stuff in. So.
Yeah, I think.
But it's been pretty steady. I mean, like I said, it took a little bit of a dip, but not very much. I mean, it wasn't.
But wouldn't you say that World of Warcraft affected you more than the financial crisis did? Or?
I'm sorry, well.
Would you say that World of Warcraft affected you more directly?
Oh, yeah, way more. It totally knocked the role playing game stuff like right in the toilet. Right. I mean, everything that I was selling 10 copies of a new release of any book, all of a sudden that was dropped completely.
Yeah, that's my experience as well, is that alternatives and entertainment and alternatives and hobbies can change dramatically overnight, and those are typically much more effective. The retail environment, and then hence us, more impactful than any sort of macroeconomic situation does.
a lot of people ask me, well, computer games are rising in popularity. Has not affected gaming? Well, gaming has been rising with computer games on a smaller scale. And it wasn't until we saw in World of Warcraft that had such a direct replacement value of a certain aspect of role-playing games. I think people are seeing that it didn't really replace it, so they're coming back.
What does? Well, actually, yeah, now after so many years, it's like I think people are tired of it, and there's nothing new that's really taking its place. There's a lot of ones out there, but they're not really as popular. What hurts us a little bit more is the mass market release of board games. I can't compete. I mean, I just, you know, Target, Walmart, all those
things. Are there any particular games that you think of?
Well, Barnes & Noble carries your stuff now.
Yeah, so it's typically full retail.
But off the top of my head, I can't really, I mean, some of the more popular games are sort of like
apples to apples,
yeah,
stuff like that.
But I guess I'm sort of directing that a little bit, sort of saying if you do a mass market release on it, I mean, I get killed on the price point usually because I can't get it for my distributors at a good enough price where the other places just really undercut the hell out of it.
Yeah, I don't have any easy answer to that question. In general, there's you know free market for you. If you had 3,000 stores, you may be able to have a different sort of look at it. Fortunately, I think you know we generally are not consider ourselves a hunter of the mass market almost at all. We have a few things that we dabble in, but in general, we make $100 board games that will never go into Walmart.
Yeah, but what he's saying, I mean, we're a hobby games company, right?
Right, and I understand.
The stuff that we make, Target doesn't want.
Right, oh, believe me, I know.
Yeah.
I mean, we don't make stuff so Target wants it. We make the stuff that we think is going to be awesome. Yeah. Right, that the hobby market. Now, can I say if they ever want to come and get it? Is that a possibility? Will we tell them no? Will we tell them yes? That's hypothetical. I don't know. I just don't see that happening. I mean, certainly there could be some family games, and maybe we've done pretty well with Ingenious, for example, or our board game in Barnes & Noble. But in general, those are what I call the middle markets, like book market, stuff like that. And in general, those guys, they give us more volume on product. And in general, the price competition isn't really there. They may have some sales if they're blowing stuff out, but so do you, probably. You know, yeah. And that's more or less what we look at. We fortunately never had the problem of. Well, I guess the closest thing is probably Amazon. We don't supply Amazon, so we can't.
I wasn't really a director.
Sure.
No, 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 I understand. I know you.
It's a valid point. Absolutely.
We're out of time. Yeah. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks for watching.
Paying attention now?
Yes.
All right. Hello and welcome to the Red Phone Zone, where we don't know what we're talking
about. We do know what we're talking about. You know, we called the whole Hugo Weaving Red Skull thing, remember?
Oh, right. Fine. Where was it? The Red Phone Zone, where we talk about all kinds of gaggles.
Aaron, could you cut it with the gaggles thing? It's not working for me.
All right. Fine. The Red Phone Zone, where we talk about movies, comics, video games.
Don't forget that we talk about, you know, Bruce Campbell and Christopher Lee, obviously.
Natalie Portman.
All right, guys! I'm trying to do a commercial for the Red Phone Zone, where we talk about movies, comics, video games, tabletop gaming, all kinds of other geek stuff.
You mean that show we broadcast on Ustream?
Yes!
Wednesday, 8 Central Standard Time.
Right, at redphonezone.com. Now, can you guys just give me a minute to get this promo done?
Sure, sorry, dude.
Yeah.
All right, from the top. Hello and welcome to the Red Phone Zone.
Aaron, we need a tiebreaker. Okay, who would win in a fight with Galactus?
Anti-Monitor.
Galactus and Anti-Monitor. Come on.
I think the more important question would be who would win in a fight between me and you two idiots.
Well, I guess we don't know what we're talking about.
You've been listening to the Gamers Haven Podcast. Subscribe to the show by visiting our website at gamershavenpodcast.com, where you can also discuss all things gaming in our forum, drop us an email, or just peruse our episode archives. You can also call us toll-free and leave a message to be played on the show by dialing 1-877-416-1270. That's toll-free, 877-416-1270. 1270. On our website, you'll also find our actual play podcasts chronicling our misadventures through all things role-playing. Enjoy what you hear? Why not support the Gamers Haven by purchasing Gamers Haven merchandise, visiting our affiliates, or just by clicking on our donate button? The Gamers Haven podcast is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial, Share Alike 3.0 United States license, some rights reserved. Some music in this podcast is used with permission of Joe Hero Band at joehero.com. This is a Thousand Monkeys production.
This concludes the broadcast from World Control.